FM ikuti Radio Nesintu NYC Radio Live.
So this is exciting. I got some really heavy hitters in the studio. Meek Russell Tubbs and Vince Scalia are here. How you guys doing? Welcome.
Thank you. Doing wonderful well. To be here.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us, David.
Meek has a long list of monsters that he's shared the stage with, including John McLaughlin and Ravi Shankar and Carlos Santana and Herbie Hancock and, Ornette Coleman, all the way, Jean-Luc Ponty, all the way up to Lady Gaga, and James Taylor. And, yeah. Was that in one project, all these?
Yeah, they had a big jam. In fact, it was a KCR a couple of years
back.
You should have been here.
I probably was there, but I can't even remember.
Wasn't that on live?
That was our golden era. Yeah. And Vince Scalia is no slouch himself. He's been a great percussionist, been in a million projects himself. And I guess you guys were just talking about the interesting overlap of what the reason they're here, just so you know, is this Thursday coming up, there's going to be a John McLaughlin tribute with Reza Bazzi taking on that role. Mm-hmm. I'm glad he was available.
That's great to have
Reza. That's a kind of intimidating shoes to try to fill, and that's going to be this Thursday at the Jalopy Theater, at part of the Brooklyn Raga Massive concert and jam session series out in Red Hook. But you know, you guys both came to Indian classical music in your own way, and I guess got different things. So yeah, we could start with you, Prameek. So I don't know. I saw you're a disciple of Sri Chimnoy at one point. Was that your initiation?
That was and still is the case.
Wow, no kidding.
Yes, yes. And my first initiation into Indian music, I think, is when Indian culture in general is when my mom would finally allow me to take a train from my hometown of Croton-on-Hudson to go to the big city and walk around on my own. And I would I would just love to walk around Greenwich Village because it was like, I'm dating myself here, it was around 1967, height of the flower child period, and the village was really happening. And I would just walk around and see what was going on. And one day I ran into a bunch of Hare Krishna folks and had like an hour-long conversation, brought home an album of the Kirtan, brought home a copy of the Bhagavad Gita, and I started like diving into the whole thing. I said, you know, this music, there's something about this music. Let me find out more. And I went to my local record store, found an album by Ravi Shankar. And so it all kind of hit at once. Mm-hmm. And then flash forward to years later through my, who became a dear friend, Narada Michael Walden, who became the drummer for the second Mahavishnu Orchestra, introduced me to Sri Chinmoy. And I was immediately very, very deeply won over, had a very profound experience, being in his presence for the first time. And I was hooked. So it all kind of converged, finding about the music and the spirituality from India, which, of course, is intertwined.
Right. And Vin, how did this music come into your life?
That's a great question. The one great thing I'm gonna mention quickly about being able to celebrate the music here of John McLaughlin and his various projects is one of the reasons why I'm interested in Indian music and studying is through the lens of a lot of the music that John McLaughlin did. Including obviously we know Mahavishnu, we know Shakti. And groups like that, and also coming to New York is the other connection. It's being in New York and living in the East Village by East 6th Street, which is kind of interesting.
Right.
We forget about
that. Was the first Indian classical music I ever saw live. There was that in 6th Street for sure.
So I lived around the corner from there. So we forget that whole block there of Restaurant Row, there was constantly music there every single day, every evening. Of musicians playing in every single restaurant.
I think I interviewed Badal Roy years and years ago, the tabla, maverick tabla player, and I feel like John McLaughlin met Badal, I think, definitely in a restaurant, but I think it was on a 6th Street restaurant.
That might be true.
And I heard that Miles just met him on the street or something and said, hey, why don't you come play with me, having never heard him.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right.
So yeah, just being it, you know, that was almost like the music had found me.
Mm-hmm.
Because being there and good walking point. Up and down the street, and then after a while, you know, and I would obviously go there and eat occasionally, but then I went there and started really eating, but then listening to the music, and time would go by, and then speaking to different players, especially the tabla players, obviously being a percussionist, and then, you know, saying, hey, do you live around here? Yeah, come over to my place, I'll show you some things, let's sit, and that was kind of the beginning of my way into the music. And then I just you know, started studying in New York with Misha Masood, and then from there went to Samirji's classes, Chadayan, and then Nindo Chatterjee, who was obviously one of the greatest that living players and teachers. I'm also a music educator and a teacher, so I'm very interested in how Indian music is Indian music transmission, how it's taught to those of us that maybe grew up from a different background, classical or jazz, and how we're able to understand how to play the music. So I think it's been quite a journey, and I still have a lot further to go, but this is one of the steps right here.
Yeah.
is tackling some of this music with Pramik, and I'll mention, we already talked about Rez will be playing guitar, and we also will have Neil Alexander, who's going to be playing keyboards, and Brian Mooney on bass, and of course the one and only Neil Mergai on sitar.
Wow, all right.
From Brooklyn Rock and Masses.
Sweet. And kind of coincidentally, or not coincidentally, it's you happen to have a beautiful album that, the Anthology of Indian Music Volume 1, just a beautiful tome there as the liner notes. And I guess, yes. Pramik, that was something that came to you early.
That, yes. When I saw this at Vin's place right before catching a ride with him in, my jaw almost dropped, because as a 15-year-old, I was just discovering Indian music, and it must have been currently available in record stores at the time. And I picked that up, and I would play it to death. I would actually pick up my saxophone and attempt to play along
right.
with some of the rags, having no idea what I was doing.
Right.
But it's just, it spoke to my heart and soul.
Mm.
And just the variety of both lectures and all the different forms being represented in one collection.
Yeah.
This was a real buffet, real potpourri.
Yeah. So let's hear something from that. And this is pristine vinyl, ladies and
right.
gentlemen, that we're about to hear. I mean, this is, just beautiful. Great opportunity. So what are we going to play?
Did we have the fun with Balachandra?
Yeah, that's what...
We have that one queued up.
Yep.
And I will mention, this was... like I said, serendipitous that it happened to be sitting there by my record player, and Pramik just happened to see it before we
started
got here.
Started pilfering through his collection, and I said, oh my God.
Yeah. I said, let's bring it.
Yeah.
Let's bring
it. So what should I know about this track?
Oh, just a quick side note that Balachandra also was a very powerful influence on John McLaughlin's playing, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. he would listen to Balachandra avidly, and then suddenly you heard a change in his style, mm-hmm. where he started doing a lot of the... Indian patterns, very, very much influenced by Balachandra.
All right. Let's check it out. We'll be back.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
You're listening to WKCR 89.9 FM New York. We're listening to this beautiful, beautiful anthology of Indian music, Volume 1. That was Balachandra on the Veena, Siva Raman on the Mridanam, and the Ragam was Purvi Kalyani, and the Talam was Chapu. And looking... I can't get over this packaging because it's just, it takes you back to a different era. I mean, this is just the paper alone that these liner notes are written on is just this like kind of beautiful, thick, you know, paper with so much feel. And then they've got the wax. Can you hear these wax pages with just beautiful pictures and a lot of information, you know. it's really amazing. It kind of makes you feel like there was a good old days in a certain sense. Yeah.
This is the, just to mention again, if you didn't hear, it's the Anthology of Indian Music Volume 1, which was released on, is it Liberty? Liberty Records.
I thought it was World Pacific? Or is it?
I think this is Liberty.
Okay.
This was 1967.
Okay, World before World Pacific.
Wow. Yeah, maybe they released it later.
So everyone, go on eBay now.
Yeah.
They're out there somewhere.
Yeah. So, Pramik, when you think of those 1967 and walking around the village, what do you think people get wrong, like, if when they think of what was going on? Like, is there something that, a misconception of what was happening?
Good question. Wow. I don't know if I have the vision to answer that in a most effective way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was definitely a time of tremendous exploration and growth. I feel blessed to have, been walking around in that environment at that time. Who knows how I would have found the spirituality and music of the East otherwise. Mm-hmm. It was sort of like, destined in a way, mm-hmm. I guess you would say. But, and I also believe, we can get as philosophical as we want. I mean, I believe we have connections for the past, you could say past lives or whatever, because I was a suburban kid growing up in Westchester, and I hear within the same few month period, late Coltrane, as in like Meditations, Kula Se Mama, mm-hmm. Om, post Love Supreme.
Right.
And Ravi Shankar and the whole indie music scene and the spirituality all at the same time. And so there grew the hair longer. Parents said, what are you doing? I said, I'm discovering myself. Yes.
Oh, bad, wrong answer.
oh, really? Get back to the classroom. Yeah. And so, yeah. I don't know about getting things wrong. I think we discover and then we can lose and sometimes rediscover. I think that happened with me with the music and spirituality of the East. I discover it and then kind of got out in the cold, cruel world, kind of lost the vision for a while, and then kind of came back home by meeting some very special people like Narda, Michael mm-hmm. Walden, and others, who said, "Yeah, I'm listening to John McLaughlin. I'm studying meditation with Rishi Moy. Come on, check it out." I don't know. I'd say, well, listen, here's how they got me. Ali Akbar Khan was giving a concert in Queens. An artist said, come on, I'll bring you down. Ali Akbar Khan? Okay, I'm coming down.
Okay.
So I got the double header that night. I got a beautiful lecture by John McLaughlin, who took the stage first, gave this beautiful talk. Then an awesome meditation with Sri Chinmoy, where I didn't know what was going on. I just got hit with this energy that was just phenomenal, and then followed by a concert by Ali Akbar Ji. So that made it. That made it for me, I was sold, and then it was just the journey began and continued.
When was that? Do you remember?
That was in the fall of 1973.
73.
Where my dear Narda dragged me to Queens and said, check this out.
So then soon after.
And a few weeks later, I found myself at John McLaughlin's house.
There you go.
Just sitting on his carpet and just like viewing the whole thing. And yeah. The guru walks in and said, oh, very good, very good. Who are these people?
Yeah.
And then boom.
Wow.
I was locked in. Yeah.
Wow. And right now there's this Netflix special on Osho and kind of documents. It's pretty fascinating documents.
I heard it's a bit juicy.
It's juicy. And lots of plot twists involving stocking up on guns and lots of things happen. So,
well, don't worry, we gave up our guns a few years ago.
Okay, that's progressive. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, how did you know, so many people were connecting with various gurus and this type of thing. How did you know you weren't, and a lot of those paths were not the safest, or dead ends, or fueling someone's narcissism or whatever.
Yeah.
How did you know that you felt you were in the right place?
Very good question. I think I was living kind of as a recluse at the time. I had been living like in the woods of New Hampshire because I'd had a band. The band broke up. I was disillusioned with everything. I said, I'm out of here. You know, I just went up and sort of lived as a hermit, playing with some local people way up there. And then I met Narda, and then I started hanging out with him. And then he brought me to Queens, like as I mentioned. And I was in one of these headspaces where I says, I don't know if I'm into it. I'll check out the concert to see what's happening. And I think it would have taken a major whack on the head for me to be open to this particular spiritual. But that was actually exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. I had this killer of a deep, profound inner experience that just blew my socks off. Mm-hmm. It was just so powerful. I said, "Wait a minute! This has got to be real. This has got to be real. I ain't imagining this." You know, and so that hit me. And I said, even if I never become a disciple of this guy, I just had one of the most profound, deep, inner soul type experiences, and I'll never forget that. So it was what my friend, I was dear friends with Clarence Clemons from the E Street Band, and he says it's what he calls the sky hook. He said, "Yeah," says the guru's got you by the sky hook, because he was a student of Sri Chinmoy for a while as well, the big man.
And you know, you worked with Carlos Santana as well. Was that through that connection?
That was through that connection. Yeah, Carlos heard me play once at one of the meditation functions, and we met, and then we became kind of friends. He was on the West Coast, I was on the East Coast, and then one day I got a call, and his spiritual name at the time was Devadeep. Mm-hmm. And I got a call. I was living in my little apartment in Queens, and he says, "Oh, Premik, this is David. Would you like to go on the road with me?" Clunk. It's like the phone like fell off my hand, because I had toured with Mahavishnu several years before. I was in the second edition of the Mahavishnu Orchestra,
mm-hmm. Okay.
from January of 75 through June, when the big band finally broke up. And so when that call a couple of years later came from Carlos, it was like nectar. And we had a beautiful tour together. We actually put together a band that opened for the regular Santana band. And you can see videos of it. Actually, about 8-10 years ago, videos have emerged of this band. He called it Devadeep Orchestra, as opposed to Mahavishnu Orchestra.
Right.
So it's spelled D-E-V-A, like Deva, mm-hmm. D-I-P, Devadeep Orchestra. You can look it up on YouTube, and you'll see a young, fully haired Premik jumping around the stage in white, playing a soprano sax. With him, and it was a 5-piece. He used his keyboard player, drummer, bassist, him, and myself.
Mm. And how did the Herbie Hancock thing come about?
That came about a little after a year after that, in April of 1980. Columbia Records gave Carlos the freedom to do some projects on the side besides the Santana band. So he says, "Listen, I'm going to do something I've never done before. I'm going to call Herbie. I'm going to call Wayne Shorter. I'm going to call Tony Williams, Ron Carter. I'm going to get a lot of the original Miles Davis people, as well as some of his regular band members. And my buddy Russell Tubbs, come on out with me." And so I found myself among the giants.
Yeah.
And that was even heavier for me than everything else I've done.
Right.
As great as it was being a Mahavishnu Orchestra, I was still kind of a side man. Mm-hmm. And here it is. I'm in a room meeting with Herbie and Carlos. There's the three of us, and say, "Okay, Russell, what are we going to do?" They're asking me. They're asking me what they're going to do for this album, Herbie and Carlos. I said, "Well, I got some ideas for a couple of arrangements. I have some of the, Sri Chinmoy's devotional melodies that we can do arrangements of. Okay, let's do it." And so the Sri Chinmoy melodies became killer jazz fusion pieces.
Wow.
And the album, which I highly recommend, is called The Swing of Delight.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we should check some of that stuff out. That's available, right?
Oh, it's very available.
Let me see if I can.
Yeah. Oh, that I didn't even think of bringing that in. I mean, I might be digressing from our original BRM vibe here, but that project with Carlos is very special. Actually,
right, I just found it. What track should we play off of Swing of Delight?
Well, I wouldn't hurt to start with the very first one. It's actually based on the melody of Sri Chinmoy's. It's called Swapan Tari, which means I think it has to do with Swapan means dream, but it's a simple Indian melody turned into a killer fusion piece with Tony Williams,
which is
his bassist at the time, Dave Margan, myself, Herbie, and Carlos.
Let's check it out.
Some of the greats.
Okay, here we go. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Woo.
Yes, indeed.
So that was our guest, Pramique Russell Tubbs, along with Herbie Hancock and Carlos Santana and Tony Williams. And who else am I forgetting?
The bassist was Dave Margan, a great bassist who was Santana's regular bassist at that time.
Wow. Carlos just sounded so free and open and
joyful. Like I say, he was just having a blast, like a kid in a candy shop, for that whole record session. And basically the whole record was made in about 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
That's the joy of it, yeah, from start to finish.
That, you know, I think in general, I've heard like Jimmy Page say, you know, we did all our Zeppelin albums in like 2 weeks. And like, if you're going to take 6 months to make an album, like, of course it's going to be stale.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And, yeah, it seems like there's something to getting it done, right?
Yep, there is something to, especially in the improvisation world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're crafting a song like, I don't know, Good Vibrations by Beach Boys, which I believe was a six-month period.
Right, that's
but true. It was great in the end.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, so we're kind of tying all these worlds together. I'm sure I actually really appreciate that not a single listener called in to heckle us.
Ha, 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 ha. Open minds. That's
open
what
minds.
Need.
That's a, yeah, it's true.
Yep.
It's true.
But believe it or not, with all the crazy fusion stuff going on, that was actually based on a very simple Indian devotional melody.
Wow.
Da 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 na 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 na. Yeah.
So we're not that
to show.
We're not that far away.
We're not that
There's
far.
There's a thread through all this.
Yep, yeah. Yep, exactly.
And that that relates to our show on Thursday.
Right.
Right.
Which is
fusing it all together.
Celebrating
the music of John McLaughlin. Yeah. And that is 8 p.m. at the Jalopy Theater in Red Hook, Brooklyn. You can find tickets at brooklynragamassive.com. It's going to be, I'll be there. Ticket winner will be there. You guys will be there. It's going to be exciting. And, you know, I think John McLaughlin and the Shakti Project, that really kind of glues together, you know, in a very clear way, this bridge between Indian classical music and the kind of fusion projects like Mahavishnu that followed. So
absolutely. And we're lucky to, you know, to have Selva Ganesh, for instance, come to New York and learn from him, learn rhythm. And, you know, he's teaching workshops and classes. And I don't know about you, but that's one of the, you know, that Shakti is one of the groups that I would listen to all the time. And one of my fondest memories is seeing them. I think they did Central Park Summer Stage, a couple other shows. So it's great to have, you know, someone like him here and some of the members.
Selva Ganesh is a Kanjira player. His father is Viku Vinayakram, who had the original seat in Shakti. And then Selva Ganesh took that over in the Remember Shakti project. And he's a wonderful musician and person, and spends about 6 months out of the year now in New York City
also,
teaching.
If I may interrupt, as a quick aside, Selva Ganesh's son, Swaminathan Selva Ganesh, is also
no
tremendous percussion. And actually, we're in a band together.
Oh, awesome.
Whenever he comes to the States, then the band is called Rudra.
Cool.
Fantastic. Kind of Shakti-esque, kind of based on the Shakti formula, with a wonderful guitarist from Goa, originally Bobby Rosario, myself, Swaminathan. We usually use Imran Khan on tabla, but also Anindo Chatterjee's son, whose name I'm trying to remember
Anubrata.
Anubrata, he's played tabla with us also.
And it's a great group. If you get a chance, I would recommend to see Rudra when you get a chance. And also, Swami had a chance to play with another project, which was with Snahasishji.
Yes.
So Snahasish Mozindor has a group called Sound of Mandolin, and that's also another group that Pramique and I work with.
Mm-hmm.
And Snahasish also comes through to New York and will be here in July. And another masterful musician, and someone else that playing with him is learning and studying. And it's learning the tradition, but it's also learning how, I guess as John says, free yourself.
From yourself. There you go, yeah.
So it's one of the greatest things is playing with Snahasish, just being able to feel so free. However, the tradition is there. It's rooted in tradition. And I think for myself, I think Brooklyn Raga Massive, that's what that is. It's a great collective of musicians that everyone comes into the collective, and they might showcase whatever their thing is and takes their own direction, and maybe because there's a weekly session every Thursday right now, so everyone can bring what their interpretation of the music is, a raga inspired music, and that's what this event is all about on the 7th, on Thursday. So that's the great thing about this collective, Brooklyn Raga Massive. And last night there was a wonderful 6-year anniversary at Pioneer Works, which was so
really inspiring
and really beautiful. Inspiring.
And the next time we will be back at Pioneer Works will be October 6th, and that will be the 24-hour Ragas Live Festival. So,
congrats, KCR.
Thanks. Yeah,
and that is another phenomenal series.
Yep.
And it was last year, I believe, it was at Rubin. I believe you had
Rubin Museum of Art,
and then
that's
it was
right.
at Pioneer Works before that, and just incredible. Another phenomenal day or 24 hours of music.
Yep. Yeah, it shows how happening actually this time right now is for music. It's like I've got a couple Shakti tracks at my fingers. You know, I want to find kind of a short one, so maybe you guys can choose a Face to Face, Happiness is Being Together, Bridge of Sighs, Peace of Mind. Those are all kind of, any of those jump titles jumping out at you guys?
You can't go wrong.
You can't go wrong. Yeah. That's the way it is.
Okay.
With this music.
Let's do Face.
It's all inspiring.
Yes.
There you go. Thank you. All right. People are digging it. A lot of positive phone calls. And that was Shakti. That's track called Face to Face with John McLaughlin. Whew.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing that you can actually contain fire on vinyl. But, right? It's the precision. But one thing about McLaughlin, you know, when he came out with an album, I think it was in the 90s, of Coltrane tunes with Joey DeFrancesco on mm-hmm. organ and Elvin Jones on drums. Have you heard that, Pramik?
Was that the one called Time Remembered? Or
yes.
Is that something?
Yeah. Well, that might have been the Bill Evans one.
That's the
one.
Bill Evans
yeah.
one. Yeah.
But still, I mean, well, I have two kind of thoughts. I mean, one, it's just absurd for someone to be able to absorb the language of Indian classical music with so much fluency, and then John Coltrane's language as well. I mean, that's right. And especially right. on the guitar. Absolutely. I mean, mm-hmm. at that point, it's like stops being fair to all other guitars.
Yeah. So true.
But the other thing I was really interested to hear, because Pramik, you kind of mentioned John Coltrane in the same breath as Ali Akbar Khan.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
I hear it too, and I've heard Steve Gorn say that you know right. He was a disciple of John Coltrane in a certain sense, and that led him to Indian classical music.
Mm-hmm.
But if you transcribe the two next to each other, it would be pretty hard to really make the direct connection. But it's there, right? So
it's more inwardly
is...
there. It's more there in the spirit realm, spirit. You would say, because as you know, with the advent of Love Supreme, and even prior to that, John turned his life around into a very, very deeply devotional and spiritual direction, and that led him to the Eastern mysticism as well, where he would visit different temples. Mm-hmm. When he had his Japan tour, he would, made a point to visit the different temples. And mm-hmm. There's a very beautiful photo of him praying in front of the Hiroshima
right.
Site, I believe, mm-hmm. either that or Nagasaki. Yeah, yeah. And he had been planning actually to study with Raviji. Unfortunately, he passed away before that could happen, but they had met.
Might have been one lesson or something
yeah.
like that.
They had
yeah.
conversations, and I think it was interesting if you read Raviji speaking about John Coltrane and his transformation.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. How
yeah.
he found the drone, as Raviji puts it.
Oh, okay. That it was in there.
He thought the music was a little chaotic.
Mm-hmm. And angry, even.
Just, yeah, things like that. And he speaks about that a little bit. Mm-hmm. On it.
Well, it takes a while for your ear to... there's so much newness, mm-hmm. that if you haven't been spoon-fed, you're
That's
free
true.
Jazz and it comes all at once, for the first time.
That's true.
Yeah, it might be a bit to comprehend all at once,
It's a different approach, too. I mean, as we know, if you approach music from that standpoint, playing in that style, I mean, I'm not going to use the word jazz because I think it's such a... It's a generic maybe term, but in playing in that style with that instrumentation, it's much different than the training you might get and learn coming from a tradition from India, for instance. Mm-hmm. And I was speaking about Pramik about this before, is you can even just look at it from the very, the beginning of when you're going to practice or sit for a lesson. There's customs, there's things you do right from the beginning. You know, you walk in, say a prayer, your shoes are off, you sit in a certain way, there's a preparation in a way that's different from the music than maybe we learn if we study in a conservatory or learning even from musicians here in New York. It's much different, I think, than just the customs, the aesthetics of it. And I think that has a bit of an effect and an impact on how you play and how you approach music. And I think that what I interpret that Ravi's saying is that's really, he's not understanding that is probably just because it's not really from the tradition of the way he learned and understood
sure.
the different styles and how mm-hmm. to approach it. But I think in Indian, playing music and learning in India, it's just that, the aesthetics of it really is different than we might learn. And like, I know I studied when I studied in a program and it was under Jackie McLean at Hart School of Music, for instance, that's a different much different approach than I might study now if I sit with someone and study Indian music from India, for instance. So I think that going back to my what I was saying earlier about education and music education, how we learn from that standpoint and this standpoint, I mean, there's connections, but in a way they're quite different. Mm-hmm. In a lot of ways. And it's a very oral tradition also, where you're expected mm-hmm. to train your ears right from the beginning and maybe not rely so much on the sheet music and the notes. And it's really about training your ears. I know that might be, for instance, that's connected to Suzuki method, where you learn by your ear first, which a mm-hmm. lot of us do. But once we get into the paper and we have the sheet music and we rely on that, I think something changes. And I think of this music, your ears are constantly, you have to be always working out and training your ears and learning, you know, whether it's rag or tal, you really cannot just rely on something written down in front of you. Your ears are just as important. And I think that's another what happens with musicians who play jazz, which is, again, I said it's pretty generic because that term can mean many different things. But it's ear training as well. But I think it's good to just kind of understand that there's quite differences and there's some connections to that. And so when we talk about Ravi Shankar and John Coltrane, it's an interesting conversation to have. Hmm. I don't think there's answers, but it's interesting to see the connections and then what might be.
But I guess, you know, what made them mutual appreciators is that intention, you know, and maybe mm-hmm. that's, you know, that's what's shared, and you know that music is more than just music. You're trying to do something.
There's a spirituality. You're sharing, right? You're playing with other musicians. You're interacting, and it's
One could also sense in a way that perhaps that Coltrane himself sensed that he only had a certain amount of time on Earth, so he was in almost like in a race against time to mm-hmm. search for his ultimate, you know, search mm-hmm. for the goal where he was trying to reach. Right. You know, I think, you know, I mean, accidents happen sometimes, people die untimely, but perhaps he, as an intuitive being, knew that maybe deep inside, like, well, I'm only going to be on Earth 40 years. You know, I've got to find it. I've got to reach for the infinite in that short amount of time. So you hear this intense struggle, this search going on. And for some people, it's just too much.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. they want to be, okay, look, come on, just calm down.
Right.
No, that was not Train's way.
Right.
Yeah, it's not elevator music.
No, I don't think so. By the way, you know it.
Well, it's a certain type of elevator.
I hate to throw in a joke, but it just came to me. Yeah, please forgive me, everyone. Do you know what Kenny G said to Yanni when they met in an elevator?
What?
Dude, this place rocks. All right, enough of that. Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of rocking, you guys are covering the Mahavishnu side of McLaughlin.
Well, it's going to be a range of music of John McLaughlin, going from his earliest album, which is, I believe, a solo album called Extrapolation, mm-hmm. which is from the late 60s.
Like 69.
So we're going from that.
Oh, right.
Yep.
And with Tony Williams, right?
No, Tony Williams. He wasn't associated with Tony yet. Yeah, that was coming.
And then moving forward into some of the Mahavishnu work, such as, you know, selections from Birds of Fire and Visions of the Emerald Beyond, which mm-hmm. Pramik, we're so happy to have him because that's the album that he appears on and toured with the group during that period. And going all the way up until Electric Dreams, Electric Size, that's what we're planning on doing.
Speaking of time running out, that's what's happening to us. So I want to make sure you guys were feeling like the Birds of Fire selection, Celestial Terrestrial Commuters.
And for those out there interested in tals, the song starts in 19/8 time with sections of 18/8, mm-hmm. Toward the end 22/8, and on from there.
Right.
Everyone get your counting meters ready. Yeah.
Okay. So
enjoy playing along.
Listeners, thanks for your calls. We'll see you sometime at the Jalopy Theater every Thursday. You can come if you're a musician. You can come for the jam session after. It's pretty happening.
We'll be having a jam session this Thursday.
Yep. After that. And also there's that Nayan Ghosh concert the 29th at the Mercy Home. And thanks for listening. Thanks to Vin Shala and Pramik Russell Tubbs for coming in.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, David, so much. It's really, really a joy.
Oh, yeah, likewise.
Great to be here.
And listeners, I will be back at 11 p.m. tonight. More great music for you, more guests, more conversation. And we'll take it out with Mahavishnu. Thanks for listening, and thanks for not giving a single angry phone call. That really makes me inspired by the open minds.
Open hearts.
Yep. Here we go.
Take it away, Billy.
Here it is, Billy.